Lifestyle.
You'll forgive me if I don't stay around to watch. I just can't cope with the freaky stuff.
Welcome to the New Flesh Podcast, a podcast about horror movies and all things tangentially related to horror, horror movies, and the horror lifestyle. This week, we're talking about a Shudder original that is out today that you can watch now if you have Shudder, if you're a subscriber. It is Joe Begos's Christmas Bloody Christmas, a movie that Jesse had the privilege, I suppose he would say, of seeing it in a theater, which is particularly interesting for this movie because it's shot on 16 millimeter. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So if you're into grain, this is the film for you.
All you grain sickos.
Yeah, all you grain heads. This is one for the grain heads. So we're talking about Christmas Bloody Christmas. We were going to pair this with Violent Night, but the timing was such that we decided not to. And I say that only to preface the fact that I don't know if we're going to have that much to say about this movie, but maybe we will, because Jesse and I definitely disagree on it. So that should be fun and exciting. We're going to be at each other's throats, Siskel and Ebert style, like when talked about Benji the Hunted and got really upset about it. So that's what's happening on the main feed. On the Patreon feed this week, Jesse and I are going off. We have a bunch of bonus episodes scheduled where we're talking about recent releases. And this week, it will either be Emancipation or The Whale. Or perhaps a combination of those things. Also, maybe there's so many other things. There's a lot of stuff that I've seen that I know Jesse's seen, like Empire of Light, maybe we should talk about. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, that's definitely going to be one. Jesse and I went and saw a weepy together.
That's right.
Jesse and I saw a tearjerker called Spoiler Alert. Maybe we'll talk about that. So just to say, there's a lot of non-horror adjacent stuff on the Patreon. We're keeping it going. There's no slowdown for the holidays. We're banking stuff. We're getting ahead of it. It's an incredible time to be a fleshhead. What's going on in your world, Jesse, before we get to the news of the week and the main event?
I got a cold. I don't know. I've been watching some Christmas horror movies of yore, but in a way that I think will tie in well to the movie we're going to discuss. And because I was hoping to write something about tied to Christmas, Bloody Christmas, about Christmas horror movies. And my editor, who is wonderful, I feel like encouraged me to write it and then had second thoughts because I feel like we've been going back and forth about it for like 6 or 7 emails. I can feel this piece getting slowly choked out. But I really want to write about it and we'll see. But I caught up with some Christmas horror movies I had never seen before, including Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Didn't like it.
No, it fucking sucks ass. It's terrible. I can't believe that it's well regarded. I mean, this whole project has been me looking up Christmas horror movies from these lists that are like perpetuated online. And I have behind the scenes info about this because my wife does these for the website that she works for. Where they, you know, they need to be number one in SEO, you need to have more titles on the list than anyone else. So this leads to like people just listing every single possible Christmas horror movie and saying, here are the best 50. And it's really like all of them, or at least, you know, all of the ones that other websites list. So I was looking at some of those because I haven't seen, you know, there's plenty of ones I haven't seen. I was looking for kind of tips of what I should check out. Paste magazine, wow, where I work part-time, had actually a pretty good one that seemed like it was written by humans. So I use that. But some of the, like, Silent Night, Deadly Night is on a bunch of them, and I had heard of it, so I knew there were sequels, so I was like, for sure, I'll check that out.
Oh, but there's like five or six of them. Yeah,
I hear 4 and 5 are good. Maybe this is just a Fast and Furious or a Chucky situation where some of the later ones are much better. But I really thought it was terrible. Like, can you give me some insight on this? Like, why do people like Silent Night, Deadly Night?
I haven't seen it since Joe Avella and I did it in the very first year of the podcast when Christmas came around and we were like, what do we do? And yeah. We watched as many Christmas movies. We did exactly what you did. So we watched Christmas Evil, which I think you also watched.
Yes, yes.
And that's a good one, right?
Yes, I like that one a lot. Yeah,
that's cool. Silent Night, Deadly Night, that's the one where, like, it's Santa radicalized by like his mom getting murdered or something. Is that
like a kid? None of it really makes any sense, but like a family is attacked by like a guy who seemed like he just robbed a liquor store but is also a murderer. It's not really ever made clear why he kills them. He kills the mom and dad, and the kid like watches him like slice up his mom, and then it works later, years later. He goes to an orphanage and then he's kind of fucked up. And then years later, he's working at a toy store and he like dons a Santa outfit and kills people wearing the Santa outfit, mostly just at this toy store. It was like, I mean, whatever. I was just surprised because I had heard it was like a fun slasher movie. And it's like, really, I found it pretty bottom of the barrel. Like, oh, this is what we were talking about Terror Train a week or two ago. And we mentioned that I wasn't like crazy about it, the original, but in retrospect, I'm like, well, that was a pretty good slasher knockoff from that era. Like that, it works pretty well. It's got a good gimmick. And like, it's kind of this one. I was like, oh, this is what a bad one looks like. It's not scary. It's not funny. It's like kind of faux transgressive, but it mostly just like shows ladies being naked and murdered. And I don't know.
You know why the second movie is canonized?
Why?
Because I do. It has that scene that's like a viral internet scene where the guy like goes to the garbage and like has a gun and then just like shoots someone and it's like garbage day. Have you seen that clip before?
I have not.
Oh yeah, there's like a viral, like if you type garbage day into Google, it's the first thing that'll come up. Like it is. That is probably why there's like residual love for Silent Night, Deadly Night 1, because like there's this weird like Troll 2-esque. Following behind Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. That's my best read. If you want to know my opinion from a decade ago or a little less than that, check out the New Flesh podcast.
Yeah, I am going to check it out.
Early episodes, just because I have no idea what I thought of it. I just don't, it didn't stick in my craw. Like Christmas Evil, I definitely remember being wild and fun.
Yeah.
And you're right. Better Watch Out is no good.
Oh, yeah. Better Watch Out. Yeah, that one I was like, this is clearly an SEO fuck up that it's on every list now of Christmas horror movies to check out. And it's this like low rent, pretty much straight to streaming. I think it had a brief theatrical, like regional theatrical release. Not Christmassy at all. It just like has Christmas lights in it. Who gives a fuck? Like, it's just... I'm working on this whole thesis for this thing that I'm writing, and I'll talk about this a bit with Christmas Party Christmas, is that like you really need to evoke the holidays in a more specific way than like Santa and Christmas lights if you're making a Christmas horror movie. That's a much higher bar.
And yet you liked Christmas Bloody Christmas.
Yes, for reasons I will get into. And it very much fulfills my requirement for a Christmas horror movie in a way that a lot of these other ones do not. You can't Christmas like Halloween, Halloween with different decorations, which is how a lot of these treat it.
But you can make it Terminator with Christmas decorations will be in. And you can have, we'll get into it later. Yeah. Already. I'm chomping at the bit. I'm like, that movie, we'll talk about it. Stay tuned, everybody. Stay tuned. I'm rearing. My haunches are up. I use the right terms I'm using.
I'm picturing someone going, maybe Mandy or one of your pets going, easy, big fella, as you rear up back.
I'm like scratching at the floor. I don't know. All right. So before we get into the news of the week, I already plugged the Patreon. So the other thing I have to say is I saw Avatar yesterday. And I'm of course not going to spoil anything or say anything beyond what I'm going to say now, which is more about technical specs than the movie. The movie is good. I liked it. We'll talk about it. on a main feed episode? I don't know. On a Patreon? It will be talked about. I'm assuming Jesse will see it. Are you seeing it Monday? No, I'm not.
I'm not going to go to a screening. I'm just going to go see it with my family and friends for fun when it comes out. Yeah.
Like the rest of everyone
like
in the
peons.
World.
Peons. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everyone's going to see this movie. It's going to be huge. I just want to give what I'm going to call a PSA and say, if you can avoid seeing it in the high frame rate, the 48 frames per second HFR thing that has bedeviled a few movies before it, including The Hobbit, most notably, I guess, but also like Ang Lee did one with, or two. Ang Lee did Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk that way. Yeah. And he did Gemini Man that way. And, you know, it's so funny that all these directors think, I feel like James Cameron saw those and has commented on, no, yeah, those ones don't work. But me, I'm James Cameron. I can do it right. And that's definitely the narrative that's going around that he's been saying. And I've seen the movie and it's not different. It looks horrible in high frame rate. It looks like a TV with motion smoothing turned on. Anytime there's movement or action, and when it's not, when it doesn't look like that, it weirdly looks like when you're playing a video game and like there's too much action on screen or like too many characters show up and it starts lagging a little bit. It looks like that. It looks like things like it starts looking like the background's in slow motion or something. It is uncanny, distracting, looks terrible. And the moments when it's not, like when it's the camera's not moving and it's a static shot of just a close-up of Jake Sully's face or Natiri's face, it is astounding to look at. It is breathtaking. It is stunning, the level of detail, when you realize this, none of this is real, what you're looking at. And then it just undercuts itself with this fucking high frame rate shit, because then the camera moves or swings or whatever, and you're reminded that it looks like a TV with motion smoothing turned on. I'm sorry. It's unforgivable shit for this movie to be, from what I understand, presented this way pretty largely. Like, it seems like, I feel like it's just rolling out this way. Do you have any insight?
I'm not sure, but it's really hard to find out.
When The Hobbit came out, there was a cheat sheet online. There was a website. Yeah, there was discourse.
They even noted it on like Fandango. Some of them would say, you know,
and like there are some list. What I'm finding with Avatar is there are some like regals that say it, and but so many that don't, that I know are showing it that way, that it's like I just don't trust this like piecemeal that I buy tickets on is telling me like I don't think that's correct.
Dolby, I think, and you saw it in a Dolby screening.
I saw it in a Dolby screening, annoyingly not an IMAX, but from what you told me, the IMAX is going to be window boxed because the movie is shown. It's like it's 239:1, like, you know, basically scope, normal scope when it's in Dolby and when it's in a regular theater. But when you see it in IMAX, it's like scope. It's like 190 instead of 185.
It's so crazy how many different versions of this there are, because I had read also that Dolby, that it would be in 185, that it's there's like supposedly a 185 version, a 178 version for IMAX, and a 235 version that'll play some places. And I had thought the 235 version was mostly for theaters that wouldn't be showing it in high frame rate.
Well, you know what the Dolby screen is at?
It's
basically just a normal scope screen.
Yeah,
it isn't really bigger.
It's confusing. I had heard Dolby is like what Cameron likes and what wants people to see the movie on.
Well, yeah, so like the AMC Dolby is the best Dolby that I know of, and that's where they showed it for critics in the afternoon, I believe.
I assume the Dolby screens in Times Square and 68th Street and anywhere else will probably show it in high frame rate. I've heard mixed things about IMAX. Just from poking around some like Reddit threads of people being like, how do I see it in my preferred version?
Yeah, that should be a website. That should be a fucking page on avatar.com or whatever.
Yeah,
but there is not.
There were people saying, you know, in response to people trying to lay it out, someone was like, well, I saw someone was even specifically asking about 68th Street, which is where I'm seeing at the IMAX. And they were like, well, I saw the Avatar, the re-release there, and it was not window boxed, and I don't think it was high frame rate. And
correct.
It's a real mix of people saying,
that's correct.
I'm trying to see it in high frame rate, and I'm trying to avoid seeing it in high frame rate. Like, it's people who, that's what even makes it even more confusing. There's like people who have different preferences, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, I also saw it there, and it didn't seem to be in high frame rate, although I had heard he had done some kind of weird thing, like you mentioned, where he did it on some scenes and not others. So I didn't even know if I would 100% know, if it, especially on.
I feel like you would fucking know. Like, after seeing Avatar 2, you would know. Like, it is.
Well, I've seen the Ang Lee ones, and so I was pretty sure I knew what it looked like, but also throwing 3D into the mix and something that looks kind of hyper real. Anyway, you know, I wasn't sure. But it sounds like, from what these people, I mean, who knows? These are just seriously just randos on Reddit. I don't know you could click on their names and they're posting to like Stop the Steal or like QAnon or something. But they seem like reasonable people. They seem like at least they have the technical specs down. And they were saying, oh, well, the theaters got the choice for IMAX, whether they wanted to use the full width of the screen and not use high frame rate, or window box it and use high frame rate, because I guess
Jesus Christ,
that, the specific type of IMAX that the 6083 has, the dual laser kind, doesn't really work with high frame rate.
Correct. Only single laser does.
I read that too.
Right. Yeah.
At a certain size or whatever. So it's full width of the IMAX screen or high frame rate. Choose one. And this person was saying, well, the theaters had the choice for Avatar 1, and for Avatar 2, Disney and Fox are going to be making more demands about how it's played. So it's so funny. There were two different people with like little IMAX badges on Reddit. I didn't even know what they mean. And one of them was saying, I mean, they kind of said it in a garbled way, because they were like, he was like actually kind of warning someone who wanted to see it in high frame rate that they might not get it that way. They were like, it's possible that they would play it full width in 24 frames per second.
I fucking hope so, man. But I pray to the like, gods of cinema was, that that's what's happening.
Me too, because I don't want to see a fucking window boxed image on my IMAX screen. But he was like, it's possible that they'll do that, but they won't. Or something that like was completely contradictory and like it wasn't well written. And he was like, there's no way Cameron and Fox and Disney will let them do that. But it's possible. I don't know if you meant it's technically possible. And then someone else who also had some IMAX badge, someone else was like, if I see it at 68th Street IMAX, it's going to be pillar boxed or window boxed. And this guy was like, no, there's no way they would do that. But I couldn't tell if he actually just meant you're using the wrong term and it will not be pillar boxed, it will be window boxed. Or if he was saying
pedantic shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if he was saying there's no way they're gonna put the biggest movie of the year in IMAX and then window box it.
No, but I can't imagine they'd release the biggest movie of the year in this high frame rate dog shit that looks like it's buffering still. It is insane. Like I think the buffering problem that I'm talking about is whenever it transitions from the 24 to 48, which he's talked about, like, you know, projectors, when you're showing it in high frame rate, you can't like variable jump back to 24 when the movie does jump back to 24. So they like doubled the image on top of each other. And like, it is 48 frames per second, but it's just a single image. So it's just all this horse shit. And and those moments when it transitions, I think, are where the screen just like can't handle what's happening. And like, maybe there's like maybe certain projectors can handle it and certain ones can't. But like, again, this is like the biggest movie of the year, and this is how they showed it to critics. There's no way that it's like, and like, I talked to someone in Chicago who saw it and came back at me with the same exact criticism. So like, I think it just looks bad. And is the decision that like Cameron made, and it's as boneheaded as it's always been. I don't think it's like Cameron figured it out. It's the same motion smooth garbage look, this time even weirder, because it's masking like beautiful imagery under it. It's like crazy that they would hamstring themselves by making the most technically advanced looking movie that's like all the visuals are invented, but they look incredible. It's like, you know, Disney's Dinosaur, but real, or but like actually impressive by modern standards.
Yeah.
And then throw this sheen, or whatever you want to call it, this artificial layering that just makes it look like a video game. I'm sorry. That's exactly what it looks like. It looks like an arcade game, a video game. It looks like, it doesn't look like a movie when the action kicks in. And like, maybe some people, I think the people who like it, I'm sorry to say, I'm not trying to be an asshole, and I know that like these guys truly don't have motion smoothing on their TVs. I know some of the people who are liking it, but like in my mind, I can't separate that idea. I'm like, if you like this, you also would enjoy it on your TV. because like what's the difference? Like, and it is wrong. It is like how it's supposed to be seen.
I would say that I wouldn't say that exactly, because I found that when I saw the Ang Lee movies that way, I found it really interesting. I don't know if it would translate for something. Like, I think it looked weird in The Hobbit because I felt like I could see the seams. And I was like, oh, yeah, now I can see that these guys are, like, just wearing makeup and shit. Like, it looked wrong. You're right, it looked wrong. But, like, in Ang Lee movies that are less digitally based but still have digital effects in them, I was like, oh, I get what he's going for here. It's this sort of, like, realer-than-real kind of window effect, and it makes the 3D look really vivid and weird. And it's weird looking, but I wouldn't want to watch tons of movies that way. But I thought that effect on Gemini Man and Billy Lynn actually worked for me. Like, I thought it would, whatever he was going for, it kind of, I was like, this is interesting. I see why he's doing it, even though I wouldn't want to see it in a lot of stuff. So I don't know that you necessarily are just saying, oh, I like, you know, I secretly like motion smoothing, because I think there are ways you can use this technology to do something interesting and visually distinct. That said, I'm not sure I necessarily see the point of something that's like full of special effects and it's not as like the things in Billy Lynn and Gemini Man that I found really interesting were the performance aspects, seeing the actors that way. Yes. So I, you know, where you're not seeing the actors anyway in this, I mean, of course they're giving motion capture performances, but you're not seeing their faces. I'm bullshitting because I haven't seen it, but I could see that being more of a minus than a plus.
Yeah, it's definitely a detriment instead of a value add, and it really reveals itself in those moments when the, I'm assuming it's 24 stacked on top of each other or whatever it is. And it's just like an image of Neytiri looking at the screen crying or something. And it's like, this is astounding. And then it's just crazy that like, that's how they like did the opposite. It's the opposite of what should be done. Like the action should pop, not the static images that look like, you know, a painting or something. It is the most baffling, mind boggling, like, thing I've ever seen with a movie as big as this. I just have a hard time believing it's going to roll out this way everywhere, and I hope it doesn't.
I'm hoping this is just a purely personal, selfish hope, because I have tickets already to see it in IMAX, that even though supposedly Cameron wants people to see it this way, that at a theater that already has a Dolby screen that can and will play it in high frame rate, that they wouldn't insist on window boxing another screen just to have it also on, you know, like that theater has a high frame rate. So that option's there and his preferred version's there. So I'm hoping that they wouldn't then say, oh, but you also have to ruin the IMAX presentation to get a second screen of high frame rate. Like, what's the point of doing that? I hope they would just trust the theater to say, no, we want to play it like on the biggest screen in the city, using the biggest fucking screen in the city, not making it slightly smaller. But we'll see, I guess. Oh, man. And now it's like this weird fraught thing and I'm scared of it.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's a bummer that I feel like I had to say something, because like it's the only thing you can think about when you're watching it, honestly. Or like, it was a huge problem I had with it, where I was just like, well, I can't wait to see this a second time to make sure to just watch the fucking movie and not have to. Like, the whole time you're just thinking, I can't believe they fucked this up this bad. Like, like you're thinking, did the DCP not finish ingesting? Like, why is it stuttering? Why does it look like it's stuttering? Like, it's not like it's actually stuttering. Like the lines, like, you know, characters aren't like, the dialogue's not fucked up or anything. But the image looks like it's like it's slow-mo. It is uncanny, man. I almost hope it's fucked up for you so you can agree with me, but I hope
I'll
you
see
actually
get in high frame rate if I miss it.
Yeah, I hope IMAX for your purposes and mine, because I also am planning on seeing it when I get back from my trip and it's opening weekend. I hope the IMAX ideal situation would be 3D still, because, you know, Cameron's the only person I trust to do 3D, 3D, but no high frame rate. And that's a possibility, is what you're saying, because it's definitely in 3D.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility that the IMAX it definitely isn't 3D, so it might be that they don't bother with doing the. I mean, at very least, you can see it. I think the Draft House is going to be showing it in 3D. I don't think they do high frame rate. Maybe they have the capability, but it doesn't seem like they are doing that way. They haven't, but they are the type of place that would usually trumpet it if they had some special different thing. So
yeah,
that
like might have Babylon on 70mm. Did you see that?
Oh, fuck you. No, man. Am I going to go see? Am I going to see Babylon again?
I'm seeing it tonight, and I cannot wait. We'll definitely bonus that too.
But yeah, I think that they would probably say it's, I was looking on Fandango and it does seem like Regal is telling people which screens have high frame rate. And I get the sense that AMC is not, because it doesn't list anything as having high frame rate, which is for sure not true. So it's very confusing. Hopefully these things will be ironed out a little bit.
I assume by the date it comes out, like if only because the discourse has started, like I think that they're going to have to put out some sort of cheat sheet at least, or a tweet, a fucking tweet with a PDF that says, here's how to see it and where. And just explaining the different ways. So this has been a public service announcement about Avatar: The Way of Water, out in theaters on Thursday. Thursday night, I guess. And we'll talk about it at some point next. Well, you know what? Next week we're going to do Bed Rest, the Tubi horror movie that was supposed to be a theater bound film. And we'll, you know, that'll be the main event, and Avatar will be the secondary film. Avatar 2 will be the B picture. Time for the news of the week, finally, after all this warnings about Avatar and whatnot. There's a movie that's been going viral, and this is something that has remained unsaid in the press releases that I'm about to talk about. But the reason it went viral, Jesse, I don't know if you've been privy to this. There's a movie called Skinamarink. I believe it played at a festival, like one time, a small festival, but it's gone viral on TikTok, I believe, because, you know, it sounds very scary. And spoiler alert, it leaked online. There's torrents available for this movie, Skinamarink. I don't say that to endorse it or anything. I say that to explain why the news here is that Shudder has the movie, and it's going to not only be a Shudder 2023 release, but it's also going to get a theatrical release. So in promoting that, they love to tout that it's a viral hit, right? They're like, oh, the viral sensation Skinamarink, yeah, we have it, it's going to be on Shudder. But none of them mention that it's viral because it's been pirated and it leaked online. So I'm not endorsing that you go get it. I'm just saying that's explaining why it went viral. The director, writer Kyle Edward Ball, says that he's thrilled that after months of keeping it secret, he can finally tell everyone that his weird movie is going to be in theaters and on Shudder. Here's the premise of the movie that debuted at the Fantasia International Film Festival. Two children wake up in the middle of the night to find their father is missing and all the windows and doors in their home have vanished. To cope with the strange situation, the two bring pillows and blankets to the living room and settle into a quiet slumber party situation. They play well-worn videotapes of cartoons to fill the silence of the house and distract from the frightening and inexplicable situation, all the while in the hopes that eventually some grown-ups will come to rescue them. After a while, it becomes clear that something is watching over them. Sounds cool, right?
It does sound cool. It sounds eerie.
Eerie, Shudder horror movie. And it will be in theaters January 13th, 2023 via IFC Midnight.
Oh, so cool. That's soon. That's soon.
Very soon. It'll be out in a month. So don't pirate it. So I feel like I shouldn't have told anyone that you could pirate it. But it's important to the history of the movie, I think. But don't pirate it. I haven't pirated it yet. I'm waiting to see it the proper way. Bong Joon-ho's next movie got announced, Jesse. And it is called Mickey 17. It is a sci-fi thriller, and it is his, is this his first American movie?
I believe it is his, yeah, it's his first English language feature. Wait, Warner Brothers. No, I'm such an idiot. He did fucking Snowpiercer. That's in English.
Oh, that's right. Snowpiercer is in English.
Remember, he's done so much that now I'm like, oh yeah, Snowpiercer is like one of the other ones, you know?
It's true. Like, yeah, he's the Parasite guy now, right?
Yeah.
March 29th, 2024, Warner Brothers Pictures slated it. It's stars Robert Pattinson, Toni Collette, Steven Wynn, Mark Ruffalo, and Naomi Ackie. It's described, it's a novel called Mickey 7, which is funny that the movie's called Mickey 17. Like, why the difference? Why 10 more? The source novel Mickey 7 is described as a science fiction thriller. Here's the plot synopsis. The Martian meets dark matter in Edward Ashton's high concept sci-fi thriller, in which Mickey 7, an expendable, refuses to let his replacement clone, Mickey 8, take his place. Sounds like it's going to be great. Bong Joon-ho rocks. You know who also rocks? Director Gil Kenan, But that's only if you, that's only asterisk. I just like Monster House. That's me saying I like Monster House.
I do like, too. Good movie.
The
good
only
movie.
Other thing he's done that I know is Poltergeist remake, which sucks.
Yeah.
Has he done anything else?
I feel like he has, but I don't remember what. I mean, he's definitely written some stuff. He worked on like Ghostbusters Afterlife, and maybe he's even. I don't know.
The news here is that he is directing.
He's doing the second one. Yes.
To Ghostbusters Afterlife. He was definitely involved in the first one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So sources tell Deadline that Jason Reitman will move to a producer role, and yeah, the writer and executive producer Gil Kenan is set to take over directing reins. The cast is supposed to return. So Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, McKenna Grace, Finn Wolfhard, and the kid who plays podcast or whatever.
And podcast as himself. These kids have got to be so fucking old now because the movie was shot pre-pandemic, I'm pretty sure. It was one of those things that were delayed. They were delaying it a long time because it was ready to go, but they didn't want to put it out until they could. So I feel like these kids got to be all like 25 now.
Maybe the
podcast is
going to
be an old man. Yeah.
So Ghostbusters Afterlife is getting a sequel. That's the news. December 20th, 2023. Netflix has a movie coming out on December 23rd, directed by Scott Cooper of, what would you say, Crazy Heart fame, Antlers fame, Hostiles fame. What is his most popular movie?
I mean, probably
Out of the Furnace. Is that
Out of the Furnace is not. Oh, you know, Crazy Heart's probably his most popular movie, right?
Black Mass.
Yeah. That was actually kind of a hit movie.
It was. He did Get Low. I saw that movie.
He didn't do Get Low, did he? Wasn't that's another guy. That's like a guy who's buddies with Bill.
Why is it list? Google pulled it as if he was involved.
It's Google shenanigans. Maybe he produced it or something though.
He's in it as an actor.
Oh, there you go.
Interesting.
He makes so many movies that I would think that I think this sounds like something I would like. And then it usually isn't. I actually liked Antlers okay. And I like all of his movies that I've seen okay. They're just like, he never really does it for me. Anyway, yeah, Pale Blue Eye is coming out really soon. Yeah. I haven't seen it. Has anyone seen it?
I don't know if they have. Edgar Allan Poe origin story, Pale Blue Eye, starring Christian Bale alongside Harry Melig as Edward Allan Poe. Christian Bale portrays a retired detective who is tasked with investigating a series of murders. At the center of the murder mystery is none other than Edgar Allan Poe. Gillian Anderson, Lucy Boynton, Charlotte Gainsbourg, Toby Jones, Toby Jones and Timothy Spall? Are they even allowed to be in the same film? This is crazy. That's like a riddle. Like, have you ever seen these two in the same room type of thing? Like, interesting. Written and directed by Scott Cooper. There's a poster and a trailer. It's out in select theaters, Jesse, in December. So I'm assuming that means it's getting the old Paris run.
It's getting the Paris treatment. That's right.
Robert Duvall's in it, famously in Get Low. There's a restaurant in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre house, and it's been renamed Hooper's in honor of Toby Hooper. It used to be called the Grand Central Cafe. And it was literally inside the horror movie house. So now it's actually called Hooper's. And someone bought the house and is restoring it. So if you're into visiting horror movie places, check out Hooper's. The rest of the news is nothing interesting. Servant is getting its fourth and final season on Apple, the M. Night Shyamalan show that is extremely made up as it goes along. It is returning Friday, January 13th, 2023. Bubba Hotep is getting a 4K. Great movie. Scream Factory is doing it. So check out the 4K for Bubba Hotep. And I had to mention Paramount Plus is bringing back the MTV Teen Wolf show with something called Teen Wolf : the movie, which just makes me laugh so much because what is Teen Wolf if not a movie? Apparently,
finally
also a
movie of Teen Wolf. What a great idea.
Yeah. Who would have thought of that? They should do a sequel with Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
Like a few years later. Okay. I think it's time we stop wasting everybody's time with this news nonsense and get right into why Christmas Bloody Christmas fucking sucks.
He's really good.
And is what? Bad. And
is I thought really we were going to do it.
One, two, three, terrible.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I really wanted to like this. Maybe watching it in a theater with people and the grain in my face, I would have enjoyed it more than watching it on my projector at home. But no, I don't think so. It's bad, and it's mostly bad because it's like, how long is the movie? It's like 80 minutes or something?
Yeah, it's like 85, yeah.
He's always an 80-minute king. I respect that about him. That's one of the only things I respect about him. It's short, but so much of this runtime is trying to be like, what would you even call what it's trying to be? Like a Clerks type of movie? Where it's like people hanging out and talking, and it's like meant to be realistic because you can tell it's very improvised, and you can tell because every fucking word out of every fucking character's mouth is fuck. Like, it's just like, I think it's supposed to be realistic, and like, God knows I talk like that and I say fuck every other word, but I like to imagine it's not as grating and noticeable as it sounds in this fucking movie. I just did it right now. But it's every other word to the point of completely unnatural dialogue for me. And it's enough to mar the whole fucking thing, because what else is there? You're just waiting for the Santa to show up and kill people. And then he does eventually after like an hour. And then it's like very repetitive, samey garbage. Like none of the action is compelling, even though I will give it. It has some nice gore in there every now and then. But I found this movie to be like so fucking tiresome. This one of those things that, like, yes, it's 80 minutes, but it feels so fucking long because I hate these characters and I do not care about these conversations, even though I appreciate them. Given Joe Berlinger's Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows, it's rightful shout out. Yeah, and saying it's not so bad. Right? In fact, I think she
says it's
it.
Better. Yeah, the character Tori, the character of the movie, prefers it. Yeah. Perhaps the most shocking line of dialogue in a horror movie this year that the girl prefers Blair Witch 2. So Christmas horror movies, I'm going to pull back a little bit. I haven't seen Joe Bago's other movies because I'm just not hardcore enough. So I can't really speak to that. I certainly going to see this movie had a little trepidation. I went to see it at Brooklyn Horror Fest. I said I wanted to see it. I got put down on the press list. And then the time came and it was like a 9:30 p.m. Yeah. showing. Yep. It was raining. I was like, Marissa pretty much shamed me into going. I was like, I might just blow this off. I don't know. Like, I can get a screener link at some point. And she was like, she didn't say, don't be a fucking pussy, but let's be
like, get out of the house.
In the parlance of Tori, played by what's her name? Riley Dandy in this movie. She was like, don't be such a fucking pussy. Just get out of the fucking house and go to the movie. Come on.
You fuck.
You fuck. Yeah. So I went out at night on a weekday to go see this movie. And like, I really was kind of expecting something a lot more pleased with itself in terms of like, isn't this campy and throwbacky? And it has a little bit of that, I suppose. But I feel more strongly about this having watched some Christmas horror movies since then, though I had seen some before. As I said earlier, when a Christmas horror movie just tries to make Halloween, you make it Christmas into Halloween Part 2, not the actual Halloween Part 2, but, you know, it's like a slasher movie, but instead of Halloween decorations, there are Christmas lights and stuffed animals or whatever, you know, even something like Krampus, which is sort of halfway fun. I sort of was like, okay, I get it. It's like Christmas stuff attacking you. Crazy. How subversive. And as much as I sort of gave Violent Night a pass, that's very much the realm that movie is working in, right? Like, it's going, oh, isn't it crazy that Santa Claus beating people up and the gun guys with guns are like smashing Christmas lights and saying Merry fucking Christmas, asshole, or whatever, you know, that kind of like a fashionable cynicism about Christmas that is like kind of a pose. It's kind of corny. So I was not excited about that aspect. One more reason I was sort of dreading seeing this movie. And what this movie captures, I think, really well, and so especially some of the stuff that you hated about it, is the feeling of the holidays in terms of, especially in terms of kind of like hanging out on Christmas Eve when you're not necessarily, if you're not necessarily hanging out with your family. And I like, you know, pretty much just do hang out with my family most Christmases. But I've had times where I like, that meant like going to a bar on Christmas Eve with my cousins or like, you know, you know, there's not that many people out, but like there's a show at the local bar, so you're going to go for a little bit. Or like doing last minute shopping or whatever. That kind of, I don't know, there's a kind of like wistful, bittersweet aspect to this that I think I have to say, as much as like it's kind of just a cheesy 80s style horror movie.
You brought that to it.
I wasn't, but that's not what I was expecting at all. Yeah. Like that was entirely from sitting and watching it. Because I don't know Joe Bago. Like from what I know about Joe Bago's deal, I wasn't like, oh yeah, I hear he's a wistful. That was not his reputation for me. But I did, I don't know, for whatever reason, I think a lot of it has to do with how the movie looks, which I love. I love how this movie looks. I know a lot of it is just like, I like stuff that was shot on 16mm and you can see film grain. But I think that like the way he gets like snow in the frame and like the combination of snow and Christmas lights, it looks beautiful.
The particulars of the lighting are really impressive. I like, there's something he does. I don't know what it is. I'm not technical or smart enough to say what the thing he does with the Christmas lights is. It does have I do agree with that. I do think it looks good.
So I think I was so sunk into that, and then I so enjoyed Riley Dandy's performance as Tori, who's the lead girl. Maybe I'm being pandered to a little. She's like a hot chick who runs a record store, talking shit, and like you said, the first like half of the movie is her like kind of, you know, dithering around at the end of the holidays, closing up the record shop, going to get a drink. She goes out to get a drink. She's going to have like a Tinder date, but she's not so sure about the guy. Her employee at the record shop clearly really likes her and is like kind of gross, but like in a, you know, kind of, you know, friendly, you know, longtime buddy sort of way. He clearly wants to get with her. She clearly is like, maybe, but would never tell him. So a lot of the movie is just her like packing up at the store, going to see her friends who run a toy store, which is where this robot, killer robot Santa, who malfunctions and runs amok, originates. And going to the bar with her friend, and then going and hanging out and chatting with him some more, and then like going back to his house. Is it her house or his house? I forget. I think it's her house. Because I think
don't remember either.
Her family, yeah, because you were like, I don't give a shit. Yep. I think her family, like her brother or something, or sister or something, is staying with her, and then, you know, they go and hang out, and eventually Santa does actually eventually start killing people. And I see what you're saying about it feeling improvised and kind of a sloppy, you know, not as written as Kevin Smith stuff type of way. But it does have, to me, it had some of that energy, especially having just seen Clerks 3, where the banter sounds so canned and so like overwritten, which all of Smith's stuff is, of course, kind of overwritten. But, you know, in the earlier ones, there was a little more of a feeling of like, oh yeah, he is kind of just like, he's writing it, but he's definitely writing the rhythm of a conversation that you feel like you could overhear. It's more eloquent or more, you know, loquacious, but it still has that feel. And then the later ones just kind of feel like, oh, you're writing shtick, you're writing bits. And this one has some of that Kevin Smith energy, a little bit even, for this is going to infuriate you, a little bit of the Before Sunrise energy of like two people just like relating to each other and flirting just by talking. And I don't even, yeah, the guy isn't even not even that likable, really. But I did find it sort of, in a kind of dirtbag way, sort of romantic. It kind of reminded me a little bit also of Drinking Buddies, the Joe Swanberg movie. And like of the better qualities of Joe Swanberg movies in general.
It felt like what it gave to me was like Adventureland if it was insufferable.
Yeah, yeah, there's a little bit of that. But you know what? That's I didn't even think about that, but that's a great comparison point, because I love that movie, and this is not nearly as good as that movie, but it has a little bit of that kind of wistful, you know,
like when you say this movie gives you the like Home for the Holidays vibe, like that is almost part and parcel with the vibe that Adventureland isn't Home for the Holidays, but it's definitely like home during a very specific stretch of time.
Yes,
you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of familiarity, but things are changing, and you know, there is lots of
it's
things
a very
flux.
Specific tone or
yeah.
something. Yeah,
and I just love that, and especially in Christmas horror movies, which as I've caught up with a bunch more this week, just don't often get at that. So this I felt like really, I don't know, the vibes or whatever, the kind like the atmosphere of it, I was just really into. It helped a lot by the 16mm photography, the snow, and the crazy lighting which was done on such a small budget. And I was surprised, because I didn't find especially the dude character very likable initially, and I was surprised how spending time with them, I was kind of rooting for them, these crazy kids. I was like, oh, I don't know, now I kind of think they're cute. They're like exchanging opinions about records and like excitedly playing songs for each other and talking their shit about horror movies. And she like stumps for Pet Sematary 2 and Blair Witch 2. And There was just
both,
like an
energy. Both good movies. I agree. I agree with her there, but it's not enough to like pander to me. I don't know. If I liked the movie, I would say that was great. But because yeah, I don't like the movie, I'm like, yeah, I feel you're just pandering to me. I don't like.
I was vibing with it, and I really loved the performance that Riley Dandy gives. I just found her so likable. And
God,
so,
such an opposite reaction. Wow. Yeah.
I just found her, like, you know, maybe it's like some of also just like that dumb movie thing of like, yeah, I kind of got a crush on that character watching the movie. Like, yeah, which is like, intended.
You know, Bagos clearly thinks these people are really cool. And I guess it worked on you because I just did not. Or I guess you and Joe might be buddies. Like, I think,
you know, even listening to him after the Q&A, he seemed like a fun guy, but it was not like, oh yeah, this is just like this is the guy I would hang out with or anything like that. But I feel like I just recognized just enough of it where I was like, oh yeah, I'm kind of imagining myself in this situation, even though it's not really been my Christmas situation. And I've never really been that part of a local scene or a local, you know, I had my local record shops that I would go to. It's just like little bits of things that I remember from being a young adult. This movie kind of reminded me of. And in the middle of it, it's also like teeing up this killer robot Santa. And like, yeah, to be honest, the horror stuff, it's not super scary, but I also rewatched Terminator recently.
Yeah, I'll say it's just the Terminator.
It is just the Terminator, but like this does a, I thought, pretty credible job of ripping off the Terminator in terms of like watching the Terminator again recently. I was struck by like, oh, this is a lot more like Michael Mann or some shit than you'd think because everyone remembers Terminator 2 sort of replaced Terminator in their minds as like what Terminator looks like. And Terminator 2 obviously is great. But Terminator is much more neon, much more nocturnal, much more creepy, just like much more like grody looking in a really cool way. And this one, I was like, okay, I can at least if he's doing the Terminator thing, he doesn't have like an all time great Terminator style villain, but he at least is getting the lighting and the atmosphere and that sensibility right. And I was at least like, look, I say this once in a while about movies that I start late at night because it's a real danger as a 40-something-year-old man with a child that you're just going to nod off. And I started this movie at, you know, 9:30, 9:45, whatever. And I was like completely awake for the entire 85 minutes. I was not zoning out. I was not fighting sleep. It does. You're right. At the very end, boy, it really goes bad. I mean, like, that's part of what they do in Terminator 2. Like, it's kind of relentless where you really think like 3 fucking times that the thing's dead and it comes back. And that I didn't need that for sure. And it is one of those things that weirdly makes an 85 minute movie feel like 105 minutes. Just the last 5 or 10 minutes. Just
yeah, I get
endless.
That it's doing a bit. Like, I understand that it's like doing a bit, but it doesn't.
Yeah,
make
but it doesn't.
It, less...
it doesn't land. Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that aspect of it. Like, I was like, this should be funnier
just,
if you're going to.
Yeah,
do it
just proved to me how little this movie has going for it. Like, it just truly is an hour of like people yammering about, and if you don't like them, it's insufferable. And then Santa shows up, and like.
I would say Santa shows up a little early because he kills other people before he gets to them. And so you're crutting between those things for a little while. And then there's a solid probably 40
it's
minutes.
It's just funny because in my memory, it's like, nope, it's an hour of people talking.
The last 5 minutes are Santa.
Yes, that's how it feels. That's how it feels. And I appreciate that like the performance might be fine or you might have thought she was good. But that character just like sucks to me. Like it's, you know, I'm a hard partier, but like I'm a girl boss and like I can drink harder than the boys. I'm really
oh,
cool.
She's
like,
a male
pick
fantasy.
Me girl,
sure,
cool girl. Like
yeah,
it's so horseshit.
I'm sure it's Joe Bagos' fantasy girl or I'm sure he's dated girls that are like
and she's
this.
Talking all she does is talk about how horny she is all the time. Yeah. It is
right.
It is just like ridiculous. So like I just couldn't get on board
like,
with it
but,
at all.
But tons of horror movies have that in some way or another. The kind of either fantasy object or the kind of
Sure, but like they're not throwing the abrasiveness of this character. And the fact that like the whole thing is like you buckle up, you better enjoy this because this chick's going to be yelling at you for an hour.
I found her endearing. And I, as like, as especially as a final girl, like I liked the kind of feeling like I liked her as a final girl. I think they do a nice job of using that time to kind of establish that, okay, she's scrappy and like doesn't take shit or whatever, which, you know, it's in a kind of a can way, but I enjoyed it. But also
she's just like constantly bragging about like how cool she
is. Like, there's like kind of a bravado to it that I found, you know, I feel like when you're in a male space, you know, a male driven record store space, you kind of have to you know, do that kind of thing.
Posturing, peacocking.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just felt like, oh yeah, I get that kind of posturing that she and this guy are both doing. And then that you also spending time with them, I was kind of like, oh man, she's going to have to face off against this robot Santa at some point, and I like hope she makes it out okay. I was like, there are a couple people in the movie who got killed where I was like, even though if they had gotten killed 10 minutes in the movie, I would have been like, haha, who cares? But getting killed an hour into the movie, I was like, oh no, that sucks. You know, that's I'm sorry that they died. And you're right, there's cool practical gore in it. And I think a lot of it really just comes down to, besides just enjoying the kind of Before Sunrise, the bootleg Before Sunrise vibes of the first half of it, I just, the style of this movie, I think, is great. And I agree.
Interesting, like,
it looks great.
I gave it 2 stars on Letterboxd, and like those stars are, you know, it would be like a 1-star movie for me, honestly, if it wasn't for the fact that I think whatever he did with the color grading and like the 16mm shooting the neon lights, he made those cheap LEDs like looking really interesting. Like, yeah. I don't know how it's, I think I saw someone else say it's a bit like the way colors look when they're under a black light, but
yeah, yeah.
Distorted effect on the skin tones.
Yes. Yes.
Here, I actually found this review from someone named Lucinda on Letterboxd. Sorry, I don't have her full name here. But she says, the best way I can describe it is that it reminds me of the very specific highlighter pen color palette that was big in the early 90s, like a hyper-color t-shirt, but much more vivid.
It makes
the practical pyrotechnic effects in the film's climax look totally awesome. And like,
yes.
Totally agree with all that.
Yeah, and so for me, like, we see so many horror movies that are so undistinguished to look at or so uninteresting to look at. So that to watch this one, especially because I didn't have super high expectations, watch this one where I was like really drawn into how the movie looks and like wanting to actually like spend time. And even though the world of this movie is like a small downtown Broadway type street and like a couple apartments. And then I was still going, oh, I love the world of this movie, even though the world is just like some fucking random city block, you know? And I was really like, I felt immersed in it, and I was just like really vibing with it. And that really helped carry me along through stuff that, like, yeah, towards the end, it's a little bit repetitive and you kind of feel like, okay, this movie's sort of out of ideas, but it's still going. But for, you know, 85% of it, I was like really, really into it and had a great time. I was surprised by that. Like, it was not the movie I was expecting. I was expecting something with a lot more kind of like, more like a poor man's Grindhouse. Like, I love Grindhouse, but like one of the, you know, someone doing Planet Terror badly. And I was like, oh, this has a human touch to it, both in terms of the style and in terms of like the sometimes annoying, but I found endearing characters that it's unleashing. So really, like, honestly, there were a couple, like, there are tons of good horror movies this year, so I wouldn't put this in the very top or anything, but I definitely would, you know, if I made a list of 10 or 12 horror movies from this year, I'm sure this would be on it. You know, there were a few that were just like too great to even really mention in the same breath of this movie, like X or Nope or whatever. But in terms of like that next tier of like, did I have a good time watching this horror movie? This is really probably one of my personal favorites of the past, you know, 6-10 months. So I recommend it highly, especially in the context of the Christmas horror movie, which is so easy to do poorly. And I think this one, you know, it captures a Christmas vibe. And I was watching it in October when I was not in the mood.
You could call it a Christmas hangout movie.
Yeah,
that's what Christmas it is for the first half.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously we disagree, but do we agree on this part? So that's supposed to be a killer robot Santa. Like, there's like a TV commercial in the beginning that alludes to him having like military grade technology or whatever.
Yeah,
that's another element that was completely underwhelming to me. Where it just looks like a fucking guy in a Santa suit.
Yes,
it does not operate like this is a robot. And that's another where I was just like, if you're going to do a killer robot, I don't know how you do it better, but you do it better than make a guy in a suit walk like a robot. Like, I don't know.
I mean,
I know this is a low budget affair. I understand.
That's the Terminator thing too, to me, of like, okay, well, you make the robot kind of as humanoid as possible. It does beggar belief that the robot from a toy store display would be like, I mean, you say beggar belief because obviously it's a kind of a silly conceit to begin with, intentionally so, but it is silly to have like this robot Santa that was installed in the store be like a Terminator style hulking humanoid figure. Like, no, it would just be like a 3-foot, like, you know, a Chucky size, like slightly bigger than Chucky, like, you know, elfin type of thing. They wouldn't install some giant thing in the store. That's just to like what it, you know, does to try to, get to where they needed to go. I do think they probably could have worked a little hard in terms of like where this robot Santa comes from, or like what that's where it does kind of feel like, oh, this is supposed to be knowingly cheesy and silly. And the rest of the movie to me was good enough that I was like, well, it doesn't need to be knowingly silly and cheesy. It could be like a little more, you know, a little more chill about that. But that to me was a minor thing. I like the general effect of like this thing with its glowing eyes stalking these people relentlessly. I was like, yeah, that pretty much worked for me. I would agree that the robot could use a little work.
Yeah, you know, I can't be too mad at this movie because it does deliver on the gore. Do you agree on that? Like,
yes. Oh yeah. Great.
The gore is like practical and nasty when it happens. I wanted more of it, and I wanted it earlier, and I wanted the first half to not be the most annoying hangout with the most annoying characters I've ever seen. I mean, it all depends on that, because if you like these characters, I could totally see why this movie works. But if you don't vibe with those characters, it is like just not a palatable experience for you. It is not going to work. You are going to like the back half Christmas Santa killing people stuff does not make up for the horrible characters if you don't like them, is my point.
Yeah, that's true.
Because yeah, it's very dependent on them. It's a hangout movie with them. Like, what if you hated Dante and Randall? Like, Clerks would be insufferable. That's,
Clerks 3 is what if you hated Dante and Randall. Even parts of Clerks 2, I'm kind of like, Randall's a jerk. Did I not realize that?
Randall's kind of racist.
Yeah. Randall's really, it's like kind of a bully. He's not just like a kind of, irreverent guy. He's like actively mean to that little dumb guy.
The little dumb guy who now is completely different but integral to the third movie somehow.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, so you see how after having watched I had seen Clerks 3 even more recently when I watched Running Christmas that I was able to hang out with these characters because at least they weren't doing like who's on first shtick about like dick size and heart attacks and stuff. But yeah, I can see it. If you don't like these characters, it's not going to work for you. I was just, you know, I've seen so many horror movies where the characters are completely standard issue and exist only.
Well, I totally understand that. But then, like, you know, they're horror movie fodder. And like, I guess they are here, too. But not like the way this movie's structured. It's not that. It's like these are characters and you're hanging out with them. And it's not like the stock, you know, horror people who are going to die in 10 minutes. I feel like it's different, but I hear you.
I just found it like a little warmer and sexier than I thought it was going to be, like for this kind of, you know, it's 80s. We love the 80s. I was really expecting more of a kind of like, you know, quasi
Stranger Things or something.
Yeah. I think something a lot more like wink, wink. And I was like, oh, I kind of respect the sincerity of this movie, even though it's not perfect. So yeah, this is a nice surprise for me. I was in a good mood after seeing this movie.
I love that. I'm honestly glad. I'm glad you liked it. I hope listeners like it. But if you don't, fucking tweet at me and complain
to me directly. I think it would be also. I can't lie and say that. Oh, I saw those in the packed crowd and people were going nuts. I feel like that's what they wanted to have happen. I feel like because we were.
Tell me more about that. Yeah.
Well, like we were at the Nighthawk and like I feel like
I was actually sitting outside the Nighthawk. With
Brett with, was like, I refuse.
Well, yeah, I was actually planning on going because I wasn't planning on going initially, but there was a movie an hour earlier that I was supposed to go to, but I ran into Kayla, the PR person, and we ended up hanging out, and I met her boyfriend, who I think is awesome. And we had like ended up having drinks with all these people, and like that it ended up being like the judges of the jury of the Brooklyn Horror Festival who were making their decisions. So I like hung out with them all night and skipped both movies.
So you guys were basically having your own Christmas Eve hanging out at the bar, talking about movies and records. Well, and then when you watched the movie about it, you were like, fuck these idiots. No, I get it. Like, that makes sense. Inside the movie theater that you guys were hanging outside of, like, I think they were expecting us to all like be pounding them back and hooting and hollering and stuff. And like, it was kind of subdued, to be honest, like their crowd reaction. People laughed and seemed to enjoy it, but like, it wasn't like, I think they were kind of hoping it was just going to bring the house down. It's going to be one of those Fantastic Fest style, like, oh, this played so well in the room. And like, to be honest, people were just kind of like, oh, that was cool. You know? But you could tell it from the Q&A that people did like it. Like, people at the Riley Dandy was there and Joe Magus was there and they answered questions and people were very complimentary. I just don't think it was quite the like barn burner they were anticipating. But, you know, that was even part of it for me is that, yeah, I was like, OK, they want us to be all rowdy and like, you know, hooting and hollering. But that was not the vibe of the movie for me. For me, the vibe, especially in the first half, was like, oh, I like watching this. I like hanging out here. So it's a little more like had a little more of that Christmas melancholy that I enjoy, even though I haven't always experienced it firsthand.
Well, there you go. There you have it. Jesse says yes. Brett says no. You decide.
You decide. That's right. It's up to you. You decide. To vote.
Yeah. Please call in at 1-800-NEW-FLESH and cast your vote. It's on Shudder right now. You can watch it.
It is also playing in a movie theater. So that's what I was going to say, is that I might have liked it more because I saw it in a movie theater. I do think it like the visuals look great in the theater. It's playing at a couple theaters in New York. I don't know how wide it is, but it's more than one theater, which is impressive. So if it's in your neighborhood, it probably isn't playing AMC because I bet they don't play. It's confusing because AMC, the other AMC, owns Shudder.
But yes, but not this one.
But not the theater chain. But it is playing at some theaters. I think it's a fun time out. Honestly, there's like a bunch of fancy movies opening this weekend: The Whale, Empire of Light, etc. And Christmas Bloody Christmas is by far the one I enjoyed the most. That's my recommendation for this.
I actually might agree with that still.
Yeah. So just because you hate the other ones.
Yeah. Well, stick around for the Patreon that will drop.
We'll get into
today
it.
Or midweek. I've been dropping them midweek just to space them out.
Just give something people nice to look forward to.
Yeah. So basically on Wednesdays we drop those. So on Wednesday you can hear Jesse and I talk about The Whale and whatever other movies we decided to do. But
Father Stew Reborn.
Nope, not seeing that. I've already put the foot down on the podcast where I review every movie every week. Caveat, I will not review Father Stew again because the studio decided to make it PG or PG-13 or whatever because the Christian people didn't care for the R-rated version or whatever. Anyway, Patreon, do it. We'll be there. Goodbye.